Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Shoftim, Perek Zion. In Perek Vav, we met our new leader, Gidon, the new Shofet, and we discovered some interesting parallels to some of our greatest leaders of all times, Moshe and Abraham. And yet, at the end of Perek Vav, we left Gidon as fearful. Twice he asked Hashem to send him a sign that he would actually be able to save Bnei Israel. This after he already had Hashem's reassurance. So what do we make of this? So first of all, I just want to point out that Moshe Rabbeinu, he himself also expressed fear. And similar to Gidon, who Hashem showed him signs in order to encourage him, Hashem also gave Moshe signs. It wasn't for the same reason. Moshe was worried that Bnei Israel wouldn't believe him, and the signs initially seemed a way to convince Bnei Israel. But there was certainly some self-doubt in Moshe's hesitations as well. And the Torah also tells us explicitly in the beginning of Sefer Shemot that Moshe was fearful after he killed the Mitzri. So the first thing I just want to point out is that fear is not something that's incompatible with our leaders. Gidon himself is fearful, and he's described as fearful in Perek Vav, aside from the signs, as someone, when he destroyed the Mizbeach at night, he went specifically at night because he was afraid of his father and the people from the city. Turns out his fear about his father was unfounded. His father became his biggest defender. But we already have this question about Gidon. Why is he so hesitant? And we'll see that this becomes central again in our Perek. Now, the Perek actually begins with a very strong start from Gidon. The first pasuk says, Vayashkem Yerubaal hu Gidon v'chol ha'am asher ito, v'yachanu al ein charod u'machane midyan hayalo mitzafon. So Gidon, Yerubaal, who is Gidon, and Yerubaal, remember, is the name that he earned after he got rid of the idolatrous Mizbeach in his home and built another one. So he has his old name and his new name, and he's getting up and he's gathering the nation together. So he feels like he has a strong start. And we know also that he's successful in gathering the people. He actually gathers 32,000 people ready to go to war with Midian. But then Hashem tells him that he needs to send people home. By the time we get to Pasuk Bet, we're already bringing down the number of people. Vayomer Hashem el Gidon, Rav ha'am asher itach mititi et Midyon biyadam. Too many people. I can't give Midyon into your hands with this many people. Penit ba'er la Yisrael lemor yadi hoshia li. Right? People might say that, Israel might say, it was our own hand that saved us. So we're going to need to cut down the number of people. So then God says, Ata krana bazne ha'am lemor mi arei v'chared, Yeshuv v'yitzpor mehar Gilad. So whoever is afraid, that person should return from Har Gilad. And this is actually the rules that we learn in Sefer Devarim about a Melchemet Reshut, a non-required war, in which case people who are fearful are allowed to go home. And in that case, now it's interesting because this war is clearly not a war of choice. This is a war where they're saving themselves from oppression that is, you know, kind of strangling the life out of them. But yet, this is the way that the people are eliminated. Now, in Devarim, there's a lot of debate about why do people who are afraid go home from war? And it might be strategic, meaning people who are afraid can bring down the morale. And that is one way to look at it. But certainly don't most people who go into a war feel afraid. So I think maybe it's because of this that we also have other reasons that that this fear causes people to be sent home. And a number of the different Rishonim offer religious reasons, theological reasons. Maybe these, the people who are afraid, are not actually afraid of the war. They're afraid of their Averot. Their sins, which could get in the way in terms of a victory. Or maybe these people are afraid because they don't have complete bitachon, they don't have complete trust in Hashem, that Hashem will save them, that Hashem will win the war for them. And both of those reasons, the religious reasons, speak to this particular type of war, which is a war that comes along with the recognition that God is behind everything. Even when there is human initiative, God is behind it. So here, Gidon says, okay, you're afraid, go home. So out of 32,000 people, 22,000 go home and 10,000 remain. But God says once again, this is still not enough. This is still too many people. We need to cut this number down more. They go down to the water, and here to take the drink, it's the people who crouch down to get their water. They're told to go home versus the people who lie down and use their hands kind of to put the water, bring the water to their mouth. They're told that they're going to stay. And there's a lot of different discussion about why. Is it because of idolatry? Is it because of almost a pull towards the material, like that they were so anxious to get down to the water? There's a lot of different opinions about why. But and it's not really totally clear. But what we do know is that only 300 remain after this test. Out of those 32,000 soldiers, now Gidon is left with only 300. And Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Hashem el Gidon, God turns to Gidon and says, Bishlosh me'ot ha'ish hamalakakim oshia etchem. So with these 300 people, that's how I'll save you. And v'natati et Midian bi'adecha, and I will give Midian into your hands with these 300. Now, this certainly is a very a monumentous moment for Gidon. He gathered 32,000 people, and then after these two tests sifting out, here he is with 300 people. But he actually springs into action immediately, and he does a number of really smart things. First of all, he takes the provisions from the people who are going home to give it to the people who are staying, and he also takes the shofarot, which were used at that point at that time as trumpets that the leader of each group of soldiers would have that. So now he took all the shofarot. So now everybody will have their own shofar. And the other thing he did is he takes his small camp and he moves them at night to be right near the enemy. And because they're small and it's at night, they're not going to be spotted. So he really does immediately spring into action. But then that night, Hashem comes to Gidon again and he says to him, go down to the enemy camp. I want to prove to you that I'm giving them into your hands. And then he says, but if you're afraid to go alone, if you're afraid, take Pura, your Na'ar, your servant, to the enemy camp. And then you'll be able to hear what they're talking about. And afterwards, your hands will be strengthened. And we find out right after that Gidon goes. And yes, he does bring his Na'ar, his servant, his right-hand man, Pura, along with him, indicating that, yes, he is fearful. And when they get down to the camp, we immediately understand why. The imagery is very compelling. The camp is swarming. It's described as Arbella Rove, like it's full of grasshoppers who are almost like swarming like insects. And that metaphor actually was used earlier in the parak to also describe the Midianim and the other nations that are joining them. And in that case, they were like grasshoppers because they ate up all of the food that the field was producing. It says their camels are so many, they're like chol sha'al sfat hayam larov, like the sand that's on the beach, on the sea. And that's really the description that's supposed to describe Bnei Yisrael, our great numbers. But here, this is what's describing the enemy camp. And this seems like this is only going to make Gidon more afraid. But once they get there, Gidon hears a dream. It's actually a very strange dream about he overhears one friend talking to another, saying, oh, listen to the dream that I had. There was a piece of barley bread. It was flying around the camp, and then it hit the tent of the camp of Midian, and then the tent blew over. His friend who's listening to the dream says, I got a good explanation for you of what happened. Ein zod bilti im cherev Gidon ben Yoash ish Yisrael natan ha'elokim biado et Midian v'et kol ha'machaneh. So it says this has to be the sword of Gidon, the son of Yoash. Hashem gave the camp into his hands, it gave us into his hands, and that's why you're having this dream. Now Gidon hears that, and just as Hashem predicted, it really does give him his strength back. And he comes back, and he goes to the camp, and he says to them, Kumu, ki natan Hashem biyadchem et machane Midian. Get up, God has given us into your hands. And then he continues with the plan that we started seeing unfolding earlier, but now we really see that Gidon has a plan of psychological warfare. How is he going to use 300 people to his advantage? He doesn't have the 32,000 that he first pulled together. And the truth is that 32,000 would still be by far outnumbered by the Midianite camp. But what do you do with 300? So Gideon takes the camp. He splits them into three parts. He gives them supplies, and the supplies are interesting. Each person, each soldier, gets a shofar, the trumpet. Each one gets an empty vessel, a kad, and they also get a candle. And then Gideon tells them, follow me and do what I do. Va'amartem, you should say, la'Hashem u'le'Gideon. This is for God and for Gideon. And what happens is each soldier has the candle, has the vessel, has the shofar, and all at once Gideon blows the shofar, they all blow the shofar, they break their kadim, they hold their candles. The camp of Midian sees them, and instead of realizing that it's 300 people, instead they think that it's 300 troops, because generally the trumpet was only given to the head of each troop. So here they hear all the noise, they hear the breaking vessels, they see all the candles, and they mistakenly think that this is a huge camp. And we know that they're already afraid, so panic ensues. And ultimately, Vayasem, God gets involved. Vayasem Hashem et cherev ish bere'ehu. There's chaos. Each person kills the other, and they call their other, and ultimately they run away. And Gideon then calls the other Shvatim for help. Asher comes, Naphtali, Ephraim, his own tribe again, Menashe, and they are successful in really decimating the enemy. And the parak ends with a declaration of victory. Virosh Orei V'Ze'ev, these are the two Sarim, the two officers of Midian. The heads of these two officers, Orei and Ze'ev, are brought to Gideon and Eber HaYarden. And so just looking back, what we see here is really an amazing example of perhaps the ideal war in Sefer Shoftim, where there's a fusion of miraculous warfare. It's only 300 that are able to defeat this camp of enemies, of thousands upon thousands of their enemies. But it's a fusion of this miraculous, like God's intervention, along with this brilliant psychological warfare that Gideon steps in and thinks of this plan. You know, how do I capitalize on the fact that we only have 300? So it's a great example of the fusion between trust, emunah, in Hashem, but also our purpose, like a human purpose in what can I do? I still have a responsibility to do something. And also there's still this theme of the fear that I mentioned at the beginning. It comes up. Gideon needs that reassurance right before he goes. So that fear that we saw in Perek Vav is not entirely gone. And I would say, and there's a few other mentions of this. So we have this word Yarei and Chared, right, which both are synonyms for fear. And I think it's even hidden in some of the other words that are not talking about fear, those two shorashim. For example, the place that the people camp initially is called Ein Charod, which sounds like, again, that word chared, fear. And even when the shofarot are trumpeted, the word that's used is Vayareu HaShofarot, which has an ayin. It's a different shoresh, but has the same sound as the word yarei. So it does seem like this piece of this fear is something that's almost built in. And Gideon, of course, has his own fears. And he also sends the people away who are fearful. I always wonder, what was that like for Gideon to be sending home all the people who are fearful when he knows that he himself is fearful? And what does that feel like as a leader? But I actually think there's an important message that comes out of here, which is, first of all, not all fear is the same. And Gideon's fear, to some degree, is embraced by God. And Hashem takes care of Gideon. Hashem nourishes him. And that fear that Gideon has by the end is a non-debilitating fear. He was able to go into action to get things ready, but then Hashem saw that he wasn't fully there yet, and he knew he needed that second reassurance. So there's a nurturing piece where Hashem addresses Gideon's fears head on, takes him down to the camp so that he can have that confidence. So while on the one hand, fear seems to be an eliminator here, you can't be part of this if you're fearful, on the other hand, we see a different perspective where Hashem is nurturing at the same time a fearful leader, helping this leader overcome his fear so that he can reach his full potential. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.